All right, we go down to San Diego and bring in the professor, Ron Wotus. Well, good morning. How are you?
Marty, good morning to you. I'm doing well. I heard you guys woke up to a sunny morning there in San Francisco. Down here in San Diego, I'm looking at a marine layer that's very thick, and the field is getting pretty wet right now, but that'll burn off, as we all know, and it'll probably be a beautiful day for a game.
Well, you know, watching the games on TV, of course, I'm down here in Arizona, where, you know, it gets to be about 110, you know, during the summer, which helps because you don't have to use your stove. You cook the food on the sidewalk outside.
Right. Well, when I managed the Phoenix Firebirds in the summer, I used to do my eggs on the blacktop, right?
Exactly. You got it.
Yeah.
You got it. But it's been exciting baseball. I know the Giants haven't won the two games down there, but, well, just the atmosphere. It is 2021, and baseball's back. And I don't know, I kind of see the games sort of like Yankee Red Sox games. You know, the fans are into it, a lot of music, things going on.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, there was a lot of energy down here the last 2 days. You know, San Diego's got a good team. There's no doubt about it. But you know what? The fans are coming out here, and they have a party here every time they play. It was a lot of energy. They're loud. Actually, they do a pretty good job entertaining the fans, you know, with the music and all the things that they do down here. So great environment to play in. You know, the first game obviously was a nail-biter, could have went either way. And yesterday was the same. Two good games, except, you know, they pushed the runs across late in the game to really put the game out of reach for us. They got a good club. Let's face it, they really do.
Hey, let's talk about River Islands for a minute. Colleen was nice enough to send me some information this week. Two new lakes are getting ready to open. That means all new models and new neighborhoods opening just about every month now. And you can get out on those lakes for catch and release, fishing, for the paddle boarding that you and I always talk about. But the big deal is the dog park. They now have two different areas, one for the big dogs and one for the little guys. You could appreciate that.
Yeah, Marty, I certainly can. But it's no surprise that they just keep expanding, you know, and another school's being built, the plan for the high school. They just keep going strong because of all the things that you mentioned. One you didn't mention was the affordable housing. You know, and then you look at all the amenities they had. And I do like that with the dog park. Who has two dog parks? You know, Lori and I just got a English cream retriever named Makana, and we're new pet owners. And to have a big dog park for the big dogs and one for the little dogs, kind of nice, because those dog parks would be scary for when you bring your puppy over there. So I think that's fantastic. They just keep doing it right.
And Bill, you've got the big dogs too, don't you?
Bernice Mountain Dogs, so there's no way they get around little dogs, Marty and Ron. They're big dogs, and I love each one of them. They think they're lap dogs sometimes because they love to jump on our laps and our chairs, and we're like, hey, you're 145 pounds. I don't think you can get in here, but they do. But it's fun stuff. Dogs are great lifetime members.
All right. Hey, well, you got a lot of love on TV last night and on the radio from the Padres. The umpire was chirping back and forth with the dugout, the Giant dugout, and they said, you got in the line of sight of the umpire so he couldn't see who was yelling at him. Was that true?
Well, yeah. You know, they were yelling at him, and the umpire was starting to, you know, he said, that's enough, and I tried to distract him, get in his line of sight and kind of distract him. I started yelling at him a little bit to try to take it off the players, and then pointed, hey, that, you know, the pitcher's on the mound. So, you know, those are things you learn after a couple of years in the league, and we didn't need someone on the bench getting thrown out. But it's great to see the energy from the guys. You know, we didn't think he swung on a check swing. You know, check swings are so difficult to call, and they really are, you know, 50-50 on which way they go. So, but good energy, and I just tried to make sure that we didn't lose anybody.
Yeah, they said it was a veteran move. They commended you on that. Said, this is Ron Wotus. He's been around. He knows, get in the line of sight so they can't tell who's talking. I like that.
Yeah, well, you learn a thing or two over the years. You know, you just got to be ready for those moments. And thank goodness nobody got tossed.
You know, you got a lot of TV time also last night. You give the signals on the throwovers, don't you? And there were a lot of throwovers last night. Well, what goes into sort of the strategy of that?
Well, a big part of their game is speed, and, you know, that's why they're such a dangerous club. They have power. They got about 6 to 7 guys in that lineup that can run, and they're one of the few teams in the league that like to run. Of course, you got the Grishams and the Tatis and the guys that are fast, but even the guys that are not above-average runners, they like to take chances with two strikes. So they have a history of that. They like to double steal. I think in a 3-game series against the Dodgers recently, they stole 10 bases.
Wow.
They had double stolen 3 times, and we were aware of it, so you have to be on top of it. Pitchers, you know, it's hard sometimes when you get a team with speed. They're not used to that many teams running, and it is a distraction, but you have to learn how to deal with it, because when you play a team like this and then you're in a close game, a stolen base is a big deal. So, you know, we got to stay on top of it with these guys, and they're going to get their bases. You know, they have those types of runners.
What happened on the double steal last night with Alvarez?
Well, you know, you got to tip your cap to Tatis. You know, there's many ways to steal third. You know, DeBon actually came in and told Alvarez, hey, hold him close, even though there's 2 outs. Keep him close. He wants to go. And even after he told him, you know, Alvarez gave him the one look, and he lifted his leg up, and he was about a 155 to the plate. And, you know, that's not real, real slow. I mean, their guy last night, Schnell, he was 175, 180, but you got to have the guts and the ability to time it up and take off and go. And Tatis did. We were aware of it. And he stole the base. It was a bang-bang play. So,
Yeah, big deal. No, that changed the game right there. Well, you bring up DeBon. DeBon is playing better shortstop. We talked about Flores last week, all the action he got in spring training. DeBon's been in for Crawford a little bit more this week. I think he's looking better at short.
Yeah, he is. You know, he's getting more reps over there, but he's done a nice job. You know, you just want him to make the routine play, and he has been doing that. And I'm very happy with the way he's going about his work. You know, being a center fielder and then coming in to play short is not an easy task for anybody, you know, playing infield and outfield in such two of the most demanding positions on the field besides catcher. So he's doing a good job. You know, Crawford's got that calf right now. I'm sure we'll see DeBon again today, and we need him to do that. We need DeBon to be able to do that. And he loves the infield. Look, he came up as an infielder. He's got great instincts in the infield. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad he's playing well at short.
Yeah. Do we know who the Padres are throwing today?
Well, it's going to be Lament or I can't remember the other guy's
Musgrove?
Name. Diaz. Is that? No. He's a possibility. But we also got Lament and another guy. We should know here shortly. Again, Cap's got a couple lineups on whatever guy they choose to throw, but we don't have the confirmation yet.
All right. You had an interesting week with DeBone, and let's chat about that. DeBone, of course, gets into that incident coming around third, and what happened?
Yeah, first of all, I got to remember it's DeBone, not DuBon, huh?
DeBone,
I called, DeBone. Yes, DeBone. I called Bill Miller, Mueller for 2 years before his mom told us that it was pronounced Miller, so I'll try to get that correct next time. Yeah, you know, it was one of those plays where, you know, the bottom line was the pitcher was on deck and there was 2 outs and we wanted to try to score DeBone. And, you know, I was waving him coming around third. I was about halfway down the line. And, you know, as soon as he got to the bag, I held him up. The issue was he had his head down. He saw me waving him, you know, close to third when he hadn't reached there. And he has a tendency to put his head down and run as hard as he can because he wants to score. He wants to make something happen. And next thing I knew, when I was still watching the ball, when I looked up, he was right there in front of me, and I had nowhere to go. So he had his head down. I was watching the play, and it was an unfortunate incident.
Look, it happens, you know, in baseball. But being a third base coach for so many years, have you had that happen before?
No, that's the first time ever, minor leagues or major leagues. Had a couple close calls. I've had to jump out of a way a guy that makes a real wide turn. You know, we like to teach the guys when you're coming from second to third, you want to stay as close as possible to the baseline, the dirt area. You really need to cut that corner, because when you come out wide like that, it's costing you precious seconds in time. So there's been a couple guys that took a wide turn, and I had to jump back because they came around so wide. And I've seen it happen to other third base coaches. I know Flan, he texted me. It could happen, he told me on a text, and that's one of his favorite phrases. It could happen. And I said, yeah, it certainly did. He got ran over by Steve Finley one year, he said, and it happens, and hopefully that will never happen again.
All right. Well, DeBone hit a big home run last night. He crushed the ball. So I'm saying, when he came around third, did you move back at all?
Well, honestly, I'm very aware of where he's at now. There's no question about it.
Well, he had another play. He went from second to third on a ground ball. Well, that's something when you look at the big leagues. It's happened a couple of times. What, players don't realize it, or what? They're just trying to make something happen?
Yeah, a little of both. You know, one of the most important things that you do is a base runner, and it's kind of the last thing on the list for these guys. You know, there's hitting, there's pitching, there's your defense, and then there's the base running. And quite frankly, you know, nobody gets paid for it. And you really have to be in the moment and do your prep work. It's almost like me coaching third. Every pitch, every batter, I have to look up. I got to see the outs, the score, who's coming up. That they have a guy up in the bullpen, and look where the outfielders are, know their arms, and put all that information into the computer. And then when the ball's hit, you make your decision. And what happens sometimes with base runners, you know, they get a little lax in that area. You look at the guys, or you're really not focused. Maybe you're thinking about something else, or you go through your process. And, you know, sometimes if you don't check every box, then the ball's hit. You weren't sure where the fielder was. And then the other half of it is what you said. Sometimes, you know, they want to make something happen. They want to get to the next base. They want to make a great play. So a combination of those two things many times are concentration issues and doing your prep work in the moment.
Mm. Hey, I gave you a good tip on Solano as a batting champion out of Las Vegas. There was another one that came out this week. They sent me this stuff in the mail. Today's pitcher, Kevin Gausman, to win the National League Cy Young, well, 8,000 to 1. 8,000
wow.
to 1. He's in there with David Price, Carrasco. These guys are injured. Syndergaard and John Gray. Come on. Gausman is, you know, his first few games, five games have been fabulous. 8,000 to 1.
Wow. Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot of bettors out there. I know Mr. Lasky, you know, I probably might get on that one. Who knows? But, yeah, those are pretty good odds in favor of the better. So we like him a lot better than that.
What do you think, Bill? 8,000 to 1.
I'm going to Vegas right now and putting my money on that one, because I tell you what, he's no way 8,000 to 1. I was waiting for you to say he's leading to possibly win the Cy Young, because, as you said, Marty, the only really question mark game was Cincinnati, and the other four games he's been top of the line.
Well, DeGrom is the favorite, and if you 100, and you, these odds are all over the place. Baseball promotes this all the time on TV; they go crazy promoting this stuff. And DeGrom is the favorite. If you put up 100, you win 175. So 8,000. If you put up 100, you win 8,000. I guess.
Crazy. Well, those odds change when a guy gets hurt. Those odds change quite a bit, I would imagine. Yeah, but. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. It's a lot of baseball left, right, guys?
Boy, it is. You know, well, I talk about it. You know, this is May, and, you know, you've got some – the team has games coming up. You got the Padres, another one today. You got 4 with the Padres. You got 7 with the Dodgers. But the rest of it, you know, you got some with Cincinnati and Pittsburgh and Texas. So the whole theory is just beat the teams you're supposed to beat in .500 against the others – 500 on the road and win at home. That stuff is really true.
I agree with that. Look, when you're playing real good teams like the Padres and the Dodgers, and it's very difficult, you know, to expect to sweep them and do that. But the teams you're supposed to beat, as you said, and we've done a very good job of it so far, beating those teams, winning series. And I think that's the bottom line, Bill. Bill will tell you as well, that winning series is the key. You know, you just want to stay away from losing series and getting swept. That's where your record goes the other way. So that's a great point, Marty. I'm glad you brought that up. We need to win this game today, get out of here, and then go into Colorado and see what we can do.
Hey, Ron, I got a quick question for you. You know, as a pitcher mentality I have, you live and die with the shift. When it works, mm-hmm. you're applauding to it. When it doesn't, when you think it's a ground ball out, it really frustrates you. Going back to Friday's game with La Stella playing short right field, on both those balls, Hosmer hit. Now, I'm not going to go on how it was done, but I want to know your thoughts on how he tried to field those balls, because the one ball he tried to field barehanded, and the next one he tried to catch with his glove, and it tipped the tip of his glove. As a defensive coach, you've been doing this for 20 years or more. What do you tell a player in both those thoughts?
Yeah, Bill, that's a good question. You know, it depends on the ability of the player. You know, some guys on a slow roller like to use the glove. You know, some guys go down with one hand with the glove. Some guys go down with two. When you're running a long way, I like going down with one hand with the glove, because when you're running full speed, you know, you have to bend over with both hands. It throws you off balance. Now, on those both those balls that he had to deal with, a couple of things. The first one was that, you know, it was a do-or-die play. And, Bill, you know, when it's a do-or-die play, you try to go with the bare hand. Now, the only caveat to that was when there's a runner on second base, you can't go with the bare hand, because just what happened, we saw. Grisham was on second. He's a good runner. He never stopped. And when you don't field the ball clean, he scored. So sometimes you have to concede the base hit and make sure the runner doesn't score. So in that instance, I would have went down with the glove. And if I didn't have a play at first, I would have looked right to third base in Grisham, because you know he's an aggressive runner. And those moments happen. To your point, he's out on the grass. He's in the shift. He had to come a long way and try to make that play. The second one, he tried to use the glove, probably for that reason we just talked about. He went with the bare hand and didn't field the ball. And it was just a difficult play. I think he was going to be safe either way.
Boy, great, great question, great answer, Will. I was thinking this, here's Hosmer, and, you know, you have all the scouting reports on him, and he dribbles a couple in that spot. Can you move La Stella in other words, not as deep on the shift because of a guy who may do that, or is it a game situation that dictates where you put him?
Yeah, a little of both. You know, you don't like to overreact to that, because Hosmer, you know, 8 out of 10 times, he's going to, you know, hit a bullet over there to second, and the extra range is going to take away a lot of base hits. But to Bill's point, it does rip your heart out a little bit as a pitcher, and I've had to deal with it when I dealt with the shifts. you know, you get 10 balls hit into the shift, nobody says a word. Then there's a ball like that, and it gets through, and there's an emotional response because you made a good pitch, and I understand it. I think it's a little more accepted now when guys beat the shift. But, no, Marty, to your point, we can play him a little bit shallower. And this is a fast field, you know. I mean, the grass is really short, and he's playing a little bit deeper. But Kai's very aware of the depth of him and playing him shallower. And he may have been a couple steps too deep in that instance. But you got a guy in second base, you know. You want to save the run.
Mm-hmm.
The only time you protect even more is if there's a man on third base. Say there's two outs and a man on third base and you're in the shift. I know we did it with Bellinger, and you do it more with guys that can really run. You don't go way out on the grass because you're worried about the infield hit. But you got a big, strong hitter like Hosmer. He's not going to hit many balls like that. It's very hard to defend that. But you do adjust your shift position and your depth to where the runner's at, and to the speed of the runner, no question.
No, very good. That's a good one to watch. Absolutely a good one to watch. Well, Belt was in a couple of replay situations, and boy, you know, I've watched him for so many years. He's such a good first baseman. But he does have that tendency. He likes to pull the foot off the bag just as the ball gets there. And he had a couple of close plays this week.
Yeah, we've taught him that over the years. I mean, years ago before replay, you teach the first baseman to cheat. I mean, this goes way back to JT Snow. He was real good at it. When you're at first and you know it's going to be a bang-bang play or the guy's going to be safe, you actually go out there, meet the ball, pull your foot off, and you can steal 6 inches or so. And there's no replay, and the umpire's listening and watching, and sometimes you can fool them. Well, in the instances where belt usually comes off, their ball's in the dirt. And he's not cheating anymore because you got to keep your foot on the bag. But the ball's in the dirt. Your momentum when you go to pick it kind of takes you off the base a little bit. And it's hard to just try to keep your momentum back and pick the ball. So you pick the ball, and then you let your momentum take your foot off the base. And it looks like it's going to be real close, and he's taking it off too soon. But that's the easiest way to make that play is to pick it and let your momentum go forward. So long as we have replay, you'll see that he is staying on the base.
Yeah, when a size 15 foot doesn't hurt, does it?
No, that's a great point. He can get it with that toe. He's getting an extra, what, foot there. So
seriously.
There you go.
Yeah, that's amazing. Hey, Bill, who's the best you saw as a first baseman doing that?
Well, back in my day, you know, Darrell Evans was really good at that. He was my first base. Dave Bergman was another one that was there all the time. You know, you always had some great ones. Keith Hernandez was one of the best first basemen. Yeah. He used to cheat all the time. You know, his feet were always off the bag or pulling the foot off the bag, and he'd always got it because umpires back then, Keith would talk to the umpire at first base, become best friends with him, and they would never, go against him. That was the big thing when you had National League umpires that were the same National League umpires all the time. It wasn't switched and back and forth. So you had more friendships and you got to know umpires, but I would have to say Keith Hernandez was probably the best at it.
Well, do you remember, Bill, do you remember Willie Montanez?
Oh, yeah. Crazy Willie, yeah. He used to be flashy at first base, sure.
I can imagine he was one like that, too. Well, Madison Bumgarner, 7-inning no-hitter. Your thoughts about that and plus all the controversy around should it be a no-hitter or shouldn't it be? What do you think?
Yeah, the first thing is I'm glad it wasn't against us. The second point is I'm very happy for him. You know, this guy has done so much for our club, the San Francisco Giants, and as long as it's not against us, I'm really pleased to see him have that success and do that because he's the one guy on our staff that many people thought would have a no-hitter. And in my book, and, you know, Bill obviously has strong opinions about this. I don't know what they are, but in my opinion, that's a no-hitter. If the game's 7 innings and nobody gets to hit, well, isn't that the definition of a no-hitter? So I'm not quite sure. I think they should look at the what they call a no-hitter and what they don't. I think of Mark Gardner, our bullpen coach, who was such a good pitcher and such a great coach with us in the Giants. I believe he had a no-hitter through 9, but he pitched 10 innings and gave up a hit, and that wasn't classified as a no-hitter as well. So I think they need to take a look at it. I would like to see him get credit for a no-hitter.
Bill, you're on that one, too?
Yeah, I'm with all three of you guys. You know, the rules stated
in
7 innings.
Only two of us here.
No, it just said all three of us. Oh, all
okay.
Agreed to
it. I thought maybe there's someone else here.
That's no, right. Well, Raph's on here, but Raph can't talk. Anyway, but the thing is the commissioner made those doubleheader 7-inning games. It's not like Madison Bumgarner came, hey, I'm only going to throw 7 innings, no hitter. The rule is it's a 7-inning game. Whatever happens in that 7-inning game should count as a full 9-inning game or a full adjective of saying it is a no-hitter. You know, 21 up. 21 down. It wasn't a perfect game, but a no-hitter is a no-hitter. And you know what? It's hard enough to do it. And by God, he should be able to get that as a no-hitter on his resume.
Yeah, I agree. And then he had a good game Friday night. So Bumgarner's 3 good ones in a row for him. Good for him. Good for him. Last thing, I love to talk about plays that I see on TV. And there was one this week, and I don't know if you saw it. It was replayed a lot. There was an umpire that called a pitcher for obstruction of a runner going to first base. And it was a little tap ground ball. The pitcher caught it on the grass and ran over on the grass, never got off the grass, and flipped it to the first baseman. The runner's coming down first base, and he's sort of straddling the runner's lane there. And the umpire called obstruction on the pitcher, and the pitcher was never close to the runner. How about that?
Yeah, I've seen it happen before. That's, where you really worry about that is when you get in rundowns, right? When they get a guy in a pickle, And when you're in that as a defender and you're running the guy and you throw the ball, you know, you're taught to get the heck out of the way because that runner's got that 3-foot lane on either side of him to deviate from his running lane. And if you get in his way at all and impede him or touch him, it's going to be an obstruction, and the runner is going to get the forward base. So you don't see it happen a lot. I did not see the play. But if that runner slowed down or looked like it hindered him in any manner without even contact, they're going to make that call. So I don't know if it was a good call or a bad call because I didn't see the play, but Eddie Montague would definitely give you that opinion, whether it was the right call or not.
Yeah, we need Eddie on this one because, well, I'm telling you, I've watched a lot of baseball, and the pitcher was on the grass. He never got off the grass. And he was like 4 or 5 strides ahead of the runner. So, I don't know. It was one of those.
Yeah.
But, you know, as long as we're in school here with you as we wrap it up with you, rundown, you brought up a great point, and that is, and Bill, you jump on this one too. Ball is hit back to the pitcher, hangs the runner up between second and third. You've got to run at the runner to stop him. Isn't that it, Woe?
Yeah, you go at the runner under control and get him committed one way or the other. You know, some people teach it differently, but basically what we like to do, if it's a batted ball, we back to the pitcher, you got a batter runner going now. You want to keep him from getting to second base. So you go at the runner under control, not real slow, but under control where he can't juke or jive you. But you take an angle to get him going back to the base. If he was right in the middle, wherever you get the ball, you can get him going back to second. You can get him back going back to third. Some people say run him back to the base he came from. But
right.
Honestly, if he's a little closer to third, I'm going to take an angle to go around by second and get him going to third. But as soon as you get him committed, give the ball up to the fielders and then let them execute the rundown. These pitchers that go at him and then they go all the way up to him and get in the baseline and try to be involved with it, that batter runner makes it the second most every time because it takes too long. And we want to get the ball into the fielder's hands. No offense, Bill, no offense, but they're a little bit more prepared to execute that play.
Oh, no doubt about it, Ron. But one of the biggest things pitchers need to do is get the ball in your hand. Don't run with the ball in your glove and then trying to reach into the glove. Mm-hmm. It was always taught,
right,
put the ball in your hand, and as you're going toward the runner, make sure you throw it to the lead infielder, you know, to where the runner's going to, so you have that option to follow up and be a backup receiver if that's needed. That was one of the biggest things you always did at PFPs. I know, Ron, you've done this thousands of times with pitchers, but it's always that frantic 5 seconds when the
yes.
pitcher gets the ball and he doesn't know what to
right.
do.
It's
that
true.
Every coach is like, oh, my God, he's going to throw it away, you know. And sure enough, you know, you have to be controlled. You just have to take a deep breath and understand, hey, that's an out. All I got to do is get him going the right way and give up the ball. Don't try to be a superstar in that.
Who taught you, Bill?
Yeah, you're exactly right.
Kansas City Royals, when I came up, I mean, we got drilled every day on it, and we talked. I mean, they were even doing it in the outfield just so we understood what to do when the ball's hit to you. And Bill Fisher was my first pitching coach. He was fabulous as a pitching coach, and he didn't have any hair in his head, but he's, I'm going to pull all the hair off my head if you keep screwing this up, you know. And, but, you know, that's exactly what Ron does. And, you know, and as you talk about a coach, that's what coaches do. You have to get the pitcher in that element. And he relaxes. If he relaxes, and we've seen it happen this year a couple times. Logan Webb did it. And,
exactly.
you know, you have to be balanced. And at one time, he was kind of off balance when he threw it. And I'm like, you have to. You have to run straight to him, like Ron says, and get that runner to go which direction he wants. And, of course, the runner's trying to get that backdoor runner to follow up. So it's a good play, but a pitcher in that time just has to relax and understand what his role is.
Well, we'll see it again. Well, if you have to start pulling your hair out, you got a long way to go.
Yeah, he's got that good looking hair too.
Yeah. All right, yeah. Yeah. Well, there's a few grays in there like you,
a
Bill.
Few.
So
come
know.
On, there's
I
more than a few.
No, this is radio. They can't see us.
Okay. All right. Hey, well, have a great day today, and off to Colorado. And you've seen a lot of Colorado. I feel for Buddy Black. It's a tough beginning for that team. But Colorado, it's always tough in that ballpark, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You just never know. No lead is safe. Or if you're down, you know you can come back. So you got to play 27 outs. You got to play 9 innings. And Colorado is probably the worst park in baseball for that type of thing. I mean, if we get a 6-run lead here in San Diego in the 8th inning, you feel pretty good. You know, Bill, you feel pretty good about your chances to win. But in Colorado, you just never know. So we're headed there. Let's take care of business today, and then we'll think about Colorado.
All right. Yeah. Well, take care. We'll talk to you next
week. Thanks, Professor.
Great being with you guys. Okay, take care.
All right. That is the Professor. I love Sunday mornings. I'll tell you, it is just pure baseball, right, Bill?
It is, and this is examples of things we throw at him and how he just consciously just relaxes and explains them. And that's what's great about Ron Wotus as a coach, and he should be a manager. You and I have gone around and around about that. He's just delightful to speak to, mm-hmm. and he understands the moment of the game, just like when he said he was getting in between the bench screaming at the umpire. That is a veteran move, and some coaches wouldn't even have thought of that. But he did, just to isolate it, calm the waters, and that's the Professional in Ron Wotus.
That's the Professor. All
yeah,
right.
No
All
doubt.
Right, we'll take a break. We'll come back, a very short break, and Bill's going to introduce his guest, and we've got a full show for you coming up. Giants baseball. It is Sunday baseball, the first-place Giants right here in the National League West. All right, more coming up right after this.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light. Live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.